Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
We're all like guns, and I love being free. Because I'm armed, you can't take that from me, and you should know it.
Hi, and welcome to New Shooter Canada, episode 154. Tonight we have Thomas.
Hello.
And Mike.
Hi.
And me, Benny. Back. Thank you, Mr. Uzi, for sitting in for me. I really appreciate it. I don't know what Mike did with his replacement, but...
They were a no replacement.
Just kidding. Throwing Mike under the bus.
My replacement was Sylvia.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fine. There we go.
How was the holidays, Benny?
Lots of walking, lots of praying, lots of eating. Some of it, anyways. I missed last week because I... was working.
You forgot.
I forgot, and I was working. I worked last week from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. in the store. It was very boring, and so on and so forth. Nothing really exciting. But today was exciting. Thomas and I went to farm to scout a hunting and shooting spot today, and it was quite impressive. Very happy with what we found. And also need to polish my Uzcon chamber, so I'm going to have to do a little bit of research on that, although Thomas has done most of it for me. Thank you, Thomas.
You're welcome. And we discovered it's not the gun, it was the ammo.
Yeah, it was the ammo.
What ammo are you shooting through it?
Winchester White Box, like, I think it's number 8 or 7.
Yeah, the aluminum base or the steel base ones?
I think it's aluminum based. I think it's the ammo, because we put brass through it, brass shells, and then I put other stuff through it, and it hasn't had any problems. So,
well, that's good.
I think it's just a nice polishing will help it up, and I probably should clean it too. I looked down the barrel, and it's pretty filthy. So, yeah, there's that. I got an interesting question, like being the outspoken gun guy, you know. I had people ask, oh, so what do you think about Las Vegas? So straight off the bat, I have no idea, because in the past I've come to realize that there's so much misinformation, even like days afterward, as to what exactly happened. I'm going to wait a couple of weeks and see what people say, because who knows what happened at this point.
I haven't commented on it either. It's just a tragedy, and we don't know the details, and there's so much anti-stuff going on. I've left alone too.
Yeah. So, Thomas, what have you done in guns besides scouting with me?
Well, I finally got to shoot the Tavor today. And, you know, it wasn't bad. The balance is really strange compared to what I used to, because everything's in the back end. But with a sling on it, I think that the point when carrying it was really comfortable. The trigger, your typical military trigger, but from the reset, it was repeatable and the press was still the same every time. So I could work with the trigger. I'd rather make it lighter, but what it was, it wasn't too bad. I was pleasantly surprised. I just can't afford to spend $2,500 on a rifle right now, but I could handle having one. Now that's 5.56, isn't it?
Yep. Although they are coming out in the future, I think, with a 308 version. And in the States, I believe you can get it in either, well, you can get it here, actually. I know someone who did buy one, a 9mm conversion kit, and, you can get it in the States anyways in 300 blackout.
I could see it being popular in those calibers for hunting for 308, especially up here, because it's a nice, short, compact package. And it's not light.
No, but it's the way they distribute the weight and everything. It's as much as it is a heavy firearm, it's supposed to be very easy to carry. The weight distribution really helps.
How would you describe the recoil difference between something like that and an AR-15?
The thing I liked about it is that on an AR-15, you can really feel the bolt and the spring cycling on your cheekbone when you fire it, and I really don't like that. I actually put a piece of moleskin over top of my stock just to get rid of that vibration. I didn't get that with Benny's.
Are you using a buffer, or are you putting your face right on the buffer tube?
I put my face right on the stock.
I was going to say, because I don't think I've ever had that issue before.
Oh, I can always feel it. I can feel the vibration. Maybe you're not conscious of it, but I can feel the vibration in my jawbone, and I pick it up in my ear too. I don't like it.
I'm too busy focusing on my shot. That's what it is.
But you know what first started with me is I had a Ruger 1022 with a Butler Creek folding stock. And the folding stock is a steel tube. And even though the 1022 is blowback, when it hits that that steel crosspin, the vibration would go along my cheekbone. And I hated it. So I ended up putting a piece of pipe insulation on my 1022 stock just because I hated that vibration on my cheekbone. And I don't know whether I'm sensitive, which I probably am. But I don't like it in my AR, which is one of the reasons I like my Benelli MR1 because I don't get that same vibration on my face.
Yeah, if I felt it, I could see where that would become annoying.
Yeah, I can feel it, and I don't like it. I didn't get that in the on the Tavor, which is another reason I like the A2 stock. Is it's not as noticeable with the to me, it's not as noticeable. But you know, it's a good gun. I liked it, and actually, we weren't even going to go today. Because Benny messaged me a couple days ago and asked me when I was free on Sunday. And I said, oh, sorry, man. I said, I already promised to take my neighbor shooting. When I was walking the dog Friday, it would have been before the Sabbath, so Thursday, I ran into his wife. He said, you know, I think Ted forgot about Thanksgiving. I don't think he's going to be available on Sunday. I said, oh, okay. So I messaged Benny. I think Sunday's a go now. So good thing that Ted forgot it was Thanksgiving because it gave Benny and I the opportunity to get some range time today. And we did find a really nice spot because he said first field, the backstep wasn't too high. And then the second field, we found this, it was a much better slope up for as a backstop. But the grass, I mean, the grass was like 5-6 feet tall. It was really, really tall, lots of weeds. And so when we were doing the test firing of the Uzcon and playing with the Devor, there's no place we could really aim. So we just sort of shot in front of us and kept the muzzle that low. Well, we actually shot a really nice long, we blew away all the plants going back at least 15 feet. So now we started to get a nice shooting lane. We go up there with a case of ammo. I bet you we could shoot a hole, open up, have a nice shooting lane. We're just blowing the bushes all away.
Very expensive lawnmower.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a much cheaper way of doing this.
Well, I noticed Kathy had a brand new tractor in the barn with a plow in the front. I'll just ask her son if he did just go out and just run a straight line to that one tree and come back. Because that's all he really needs is, you know, something maybe 2-3 feet wide, just enough to walk down, change a target and come back and stuff. So,
yeah.
And I preferred that second spot too, because there's two tree lines between the road, because there are neighbors on the road, but a couple hundred yards south where we're shooting. So at least it'll dampen the noise and stuff. But it was a beautiful day to be out. It's too bad we didn't really have any time to do any hunting, because it would have been a great day outside. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
We did do some armed hiking though. That was really nice.
Yes, we did go armed hiking.
Yeah. So Benny, since you're in Toronto, how long did it take you to get there?
So it takes me about the same as going to Silverdale. It's about an hour and 20 minutes. I don't know. I haven't gone straight because I went to pick up Thomas today, but it should take about an hour and a half.
Okay.
Which isn't too bad, considering I'm weighing in the freedom I have of not being at a range where, you know, you got to be careful what other people are doing and all that other stuff. Obviously, you have to be conscious of what's going on and being safe, but, you know.
It's easier when you only have to focus on what the person you're trying to teach is doing as opposed to the Yahoo behind you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, and we just have to call Kathy first to see, which I didn't do last time I went up, make sure that the farmer behind us isn't doing the fields, they're not working somewhere on the property, but. They don't work the fields. Not her ex-husband stopped working the fields before he passed away. So a lot of it's turned to brushland. So I think that one south field, I think she wants to try to get it rented out and have some use to it.
Uh-huh. So Mike, what have you done in guns?
Well, last week, before the weekend, I actually moved to a new location, about 15 minutes closer. About 15 minutes closer to the range, because, you know, that's got to be the most important drive I do, to the range and back. So in moving there, I actually had to move my gun safe, which was not fun. I actually got lucky, and the person who did our daycare had a son who was in high school who was generous enough to come help us move it. And, oh boy, thanks to him. We had to carry it up a flight of stairs, do like a 180 on like a little platform, or what do you call that, a landing, and then keep going up the stairs, then bring it to the new house, then have to carry it back down the stairs. Oh, good.
How much does it weigh?
It's the one from Costco. If I had to guess, I would guess probably in the 300 to 400 pound range.
That's still a lot. It's still a lot.
It is. Like, and it's one of those things where you might be like, oh yeah, well I can lift a, you know, and when you're walking just straight with it, it's like, okay, this sucks, but I can do it. But when you start having to carry it upstairs and like put, like, you know, when the person on the top's like, hey, I'm just holding it upright, and the bottom person actually has to like pretty much lift it up themselves, it becomes, that's when things get a little bit more tricky.
I was going to say, that's an accident waiting to happen.
Yeah. Did you leave the door on or did you take the door off?
There's no option to take the door off. The one that you get from Costco, it's the door is mounted on the inside. It's not like a hinge on the outside.
Yeah, but there should still be pins that's resting on. That's where all your weight is actually in the door. Because I actually hired safe movers to get mine because my safe's about 700 pounds.
Yeah.
And that's what they did. They took the door off.
Maybe it's simpler than I thought, but I didn't figure out how to open up the door, and I didn't want to spend 3 hours trying to figure out how to take it apart.
Well, you have to know what you're doing because you could damage the pins and the bushings and everything. So yeah, sometimes it's better to leave it on.
Which, ironically, we did damage it somehow. After we brought it back here, something had kind of screwed up in the locking mechanism. So when you got it about 70% closed, it would just... like you're turning the giant dial like handle thing to actually push all the pin, like the locking bolts out, the thing would just like seize up and you had to like ream on it to get it to go that last little bit. So I ended up actually opening up the door and taking, like, opening it up and looking at the mechanics, and I had to kind of adjust the I don't know what you call it, the mechanisms in which it actually pushes timing. Out those pins. Yeah, the timing. That's actually a good way. Yeah. So I had to play with that, and it actually took me a couple more hours to figure out before I could get it to be smooth again, opening and closing. But that was random. But yeah, and then the reason why I missed last week's show is because I actually went down to Pennsylvania for the I-Corps East Coast Championship.
Oh, how'd that come?
It was awesome. It was a lot of fun. Like, anytime you go down to shoot in the States, you're like, oh, this is what freedom feels like. You know, steel that doesn't have shrouds on it, steel that's not 10 yards away. Oh, this, I thought this was kind of funny. Their berms between some of their, like, one bay to next, were, I'd say 10 feet high. Like, I was looking at that and I'm like, holy smokes, there's no way would this ever get approved in Canada. Like, that low of berm. And it was just awesome and it was fun to do. They had lots of great prizes. So we went and shot. I went down with two other guys. And when we got there, I didn't know this at the time, but they had actually pre-planned it. We were actually shooting with people that I had shot with when I did the Canadian regionals that are from New York. And then there was one random person, and he was late showing up to the party. He comes up after, and he's like, oh, I really enjoy the show. How does this guy know I'm on a podcast? His name's Paul. He's from Maryland. And he's like, yeah, I heard you guys from the Red Hill Tactical episode. I believe he's friends with them. And he's like, yeah, and I like hearing this whole, you know, revolver shooter, because there's not a lot of revolver shooters out there. It's like, holy smokes. I go all the way down to the States, and I meet a guy from Maryland who shoots a revolver and listens to our show.
And he's a fan of you.
Well, I wouldn't say he was a fan. I said he was a fan of the show.
Oh, so he's a friend from Bob from Red Hill Tactical.
Yeah, so I thought that was awesome. So, hey, Paul.
Oh, cool.
That yeah. is cool.
And of all the things, I didn't know we could select squads. Maybe we could, but of all the squads, he's on mine too. So,
oh, excellent.
That was awesome. So I came second in my division. So that's the classic division. And I came second to a grandmaster who beat all the open shooters. So I'm quite happy with the way that turned out.
That's not shabby.
No, it's not. Unfortunately, that also translates to 31st overall. So, there were a lot of open shooters. Like, even guys who were there were surprised at how many there were.
Open revolver shooters?
Yeah, so there's the different classes. So, you go open, you can put a red dot, 8-shot with moon clips, compensators. Pretty much, you can trick it out as much as you want. So after that, shooting that match, I did a couple more classifiers. So, now I'm actually officially classified at a D-class shooter. So... that's really the catch-all lowest of all classification. But I'm right there knocking on the door of becoming a C-class shooter. So my goal for 2018 is going to be to become a C-class shooter and hopefully get up to get close to knocking on the B-class shooter.
Nice.
So yep. Did you actually win anything?
Yeah, like everyone won something in the draw. I didn't win something for how I did. I won something as like a, what would you call that? Like a door prize.
So, New, what did you win?
I won a set of grips for a Smith & Wesson K or L frame, which I do not have.
CGN, here we come.
Yeah. Or you look at this way, the same way as people say, oh, I found a roll pin, got to build another AR. Well, I got gripped, got to buy another revolver.
John Fitzgerald has a K-frame. He has my Model 19, so he might be looking at them.
Yeah.
Or you could, what's it called? Modify yours to fit your GP100 to fit the Ruger rips.
No, they're way too off.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just the way.
I'm just thinking, Mike likes tinkering. Here's an awesome opportunity.
I think you should buy a K-frame.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it. I hate buying, if I was going to buy another revolver, I'd already kind of told myself, I'm going to buy another one. I'm going to buy one so I can shoot in a different class, so I can kind of experience something different. But the more I do it, I realize I like shooting classic division. So I was thinking, do I want to buy another gun that's essentially going to be, it's not going to be the same gun because it'll be a Smith & Wesson, it'll be different, but it'll essentially be the same class. It won't be moving to a new division, right? It won't be doing anything different. We'll see how things go. Yeah, and then
so what is a K-frame? Sorry to completely throw this off the. For all the listeners who have no idea what a K-frame is, I believe that means the caliber that the size of the revolver is meant for.
I don't believe so.
Depending on the caliber, the bigger the frame. Like the original, like Model 19, was built on a K-frame, which was kind of small because it wasn't really designed because it was originally a 38 Special. So then they made a bigger frame. I believe it was the L frame, which was the next one up. And then you go up to the 44s, and some of the bigger 357s are an N frame.
Yep.
It's basically just a bigger gun for a bigger cylinder.
Cool.
Yeah. And then they do have J frames, but we can't get them in Canada because they're all like their snub-nose revolver size.
Not true. I've seen small J frame 357s with 4.5-inch barrels up here.
Really?
But it's usually a lighter, I'm not sure. I think the J frame is actually lighter, a little bit heavier than the K frame. I've never had a J. I've had an N and I've had a K. So my first 38, I had a 38 that was a K frame. That was the 15, I think. And then I had a Model 19, which was a K frame. And then the next one, I jumped right up to an N frame for my 45.
Yeah. I know that also, it might also have something to do with the cylinder size too, because I know if you go up to the 8-shot 9s, 9mm, or the 8-shot 357s, those are built on N frames. So you need a bigger frame to be able to handle the bigger cylinder. So it's not necessarily the caliber in there. It's also probably the size of the cylinder that it can accept.
That also too, but I think the N frame was actually designed for the 44, the Model 29, I believe. It was a new frame altogether.
Okay.
Because the problem with the K frames is that they weren't really designed. They just adapted the round to the existing platform. And it tended to really beat them up if you use really, really hot loads. Because the 357 was originally designed for 158 grain load, I believe. And people started using really hot, I think 127 grains. I don't
125.
125s? Really yeah. Hot 125 grains, and they started tearing the guns apart really fast. The top strap started getting cut apart really fast, and the gun wasn't designed for that type of load. And same with the Ruger came out with the Security 6, and it also was designed for 158 grains. So the 125 started destroying both of them, which is why you have the N frame and the GP series now to handle the harder loads. And it's a weight thing too. You can carry a 357. When N frame's heavy, that's why you have a J frame or a K frame, because it comes with a smaller barrel and it's just a lighter package.
Yeah. So who knows? Maybe I'll buy myself a Smith & Wesson. I like my GP100, but I mean the Grandmaster is shooting a Smith & Wesson, so maybe it's a sign. He was also sponsored by Smith & Wesson, so Ruger's not sponsoring me right now, so I got nothing tying me back.
Yep, go for it.
Yeah. All we have to do is convince Sarah.
And it's a lot easier tuning the triggers in a Smith & Wesson than it is a Ruger. It's from the factory that they're nice enough as it is.
That's what I've heard. And actually, when I was talking to one of the guys on the way down, and I told him that I tinker with my gun, and he asked me, have I ever tinkered with a Smith & Wesson? And I was like, no, I haven't. I'm like, you know, I kind of want to get a Smith & Wesson now just to see what I can do with it. See if I can, you know, turn it into a great trigger. But, yep, so going down, we got pulled off to the side. And we told the border security that we had firearms in the car. We had our 6 NIA. And to be honest, it looked like she didn't know what to do with us. So she just sent us to the side.
Oh, so you got secondary.
Yeah. So, you know, it was barely any wait. We were there early enough. There wasn't a lineup or anything. And the guys came and they checked our gun to make sure that the serial numbers matched up with our 6 NIA forms, which they did. And even one of them had said, you know, if I was the person working the gate and I saw you had a 6 NIA form, I wouldn't have bothered sending you over. And then on our way back, we told them, you know, we're bringing back our guns. And, you know, what gun are you bringing? Why did you take them? You know, and then he's asking all these questions. Can I see your firearms license? And then he says, can I see your ATTs? Well, sir, there are no ATTs. They're all implied with your license now. And he was just taken back. Like, what do you mean? No, that's not the way it is. We still have a paper ATTs. If we want to, you know, that he was saying, you know, if they were going to the range to practice with their service firearm, they would get a paper ATT to go there and back. So he asked a couple people and he couldn't get an answer. So he sent us off to the side and we went to secondary again. This time we didn't get taken out of the car. They didn't, like the guy said, can I just see where the guns are? And I didn't even get out of the car. The driver did. And he just popped the trunk and he's like, you know, see that bag there? It has two in that one. There's one in there, one in there. And I don't even think he even took them out of the bag. He just kind of like indicated to him where they were. And he's like, okay, yeah, it looks like everything's locked up. I don't need to check everything. And the guy even said, like, as he was leaving, he's like, you know, I don't believe that you guys are doing anything wrong. It's like, I don't know, but I didn't know about this whole ATT being incorporated into your license now. But I don't believe that you guys are doing anything wrong, so we're just going to let you go.
Well, it just shows you, you know, even they're, I guess they're considered law enforcement, and law enforcement doesn't know the laws.
Well, I know, but it's been that way for like 5 years.
It's been that way for about 2 years. And the one thing I was thinking about after we went through this law has only been out for 2 years. How many times has you know, those specific people had to deal with someone coming back with a handgun? Probably very few. You know, they probably did get a course, a half-hour course about the change in the law, you know, 2 years ago when it came out. But I mean, like, if your boss told you something 2 years ago, and then you never used that information for 2 years straight, do you think you would remember when the time came? Like, I wouldn't. I don't know what I had for breakfast this morning. So I don't put any fault on the officer for not knowing the law, like, off the top of his head. Right, so he sent us to secondary just to be sure, and the guys at secondary came out and they checked and they said, you know, we believe you that you're not doing anything illegal, and that's why we're going to let you go on. And he even said, as soon as you guys leave, I'm going to go inside and I'm going to look all this stuff up so I'll know for next time.
Well, that's good at least.
Yeah, you know what, you're right. It is frustrating being, you know, part of the gun community and having our ear to the ground the whole time that, like, something like this where it's like been talked to death on every single forum and every single, you know, podcast. It's like, how could you not know? Well, you know, if it's what you do for your living, but you have no interest whatsoever in it, then yeah.
Benny and I actually talked about this on the car today, because any type of law enforcement, firearms is just a very, very small percentage of a multifaceted job. So unless they're actually shooters or they have their pal, they're not going to know. They just know what they need to know to do the job. So
yeah. And you also look at the CBSA. When you're coming up to the border, they don't even ask you if you have firearms, because that's not a regular part of their job, right? Their regular part of the job is how many people are in the car, how much money did they spend, divide that and make sure that they didn't spend more, you know, and have to pay customs fee. You know, make sure they didn't bring too much alcohol or cigarettes back.
Well, that's the first thing they ask. Any alcohol? No, sir, I don't drink. Any tobacco when I was coming back? I said, hell no. I said, I hate your American cigarettes. They're horrible. I said, the first thing I'm going to do is buy Canadian cigarettes when I hit a gas station.
Yeah, but that's my point, right? Like,
Yeah.
Clearly, firearms are not a regular part of their job. So,
well, I had a similar issue when I was coming back from the Appleseed. The guy, you know, and I had my 10/22, and the guy said, instead of, I wasn't even playing the game with him. He was, is it in case? I said, yep. You got a trigger lock on it? And he said, yep. He goes, is the case locked? I said, yep. He said, okay, go on through. Well, I don't have to have a trigger lock, and it doesn't have to be in a locked case. So I just said, yep. Just answer this question, yes, and then get out of there.
Yep. So that was the adventures in Pennsylvania. It was lots of fun. I want to do it again.
How'd Sarah do?
Sarah didn't come. She stayed back and took care of the baby and helped and was unpacking the house.
So the next time she gets to go and you get to babysit?
I think that's the theory. We'll see if that actually happens. Theory's one thing, practice is another.
I don't think she'd leave her baby that long.
But yeah, so that's about it for Pennsylvania. But yeah, so
since, that sounds excellent.
Yeah, so since we've been back, I have this nice big room, and Sarah said I can do whatever I want with it. So it is going to be my reloading, gun room, workbench, everything. So I'm actually in the process of looking for building plans to build a reloading bench. Like what height? You know, I like to sit down, I'm lazy like that, or sit on like a bar stool kind of chair. You know, I like to mount my press right to the bench, not one of those like you see them all the time from inline fabrication where they lift your press up like another foot. You know, how do I make sure that my bench is going to be strong enough to be able to hold all that weight and everything? I'm looking for some building plans right now. So if anyone has any good leads on them, please send them on to New Shooter Canada at host@newshootercanada.ca or our Facebook page.
Now, do you like to stand when you reload or do you like to sit down?
I like to sit. I'm lazy.
Yeah, me too. I'm not standing.
Does anyone stand when they reload? Who stands when they reload?
People who don't reload very much.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. When I first started reloading, I had two kind of workbenches in the old house, and one was kind of at this awkward height. It wasn't really high enough to stand in. It wasn't really low enough to sit at. So I ended up using a second workbench that I had that I was trying not to use. But I ended up using it, and it would actually have just what I would consider almost like the perfect height for just sitting. But I was thinking it would be nice if I could get something where I could sit at like a bar stool and do it. And that way, if like my leg is cramping up or something like that, and I want to stand, I can just push the stool to the side and stand while I reload it.
You should ask Trevor where he got his idea, because he's got a really nice reloading setup.
That's right. He just built a new, whole new gun room.
Yeah, because he got up the base and all insulated, and he's got a gun room upstairs. I haven't been there since the gun room, but he's got a nice reloading setup in the basement.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we do have friends at the Reloading Podcast. I'm sure they could put you in the right direction.
Yeah, I'll have to send them a message. But yeah, and then outside that, I bought my first trail cam, because now that I have a little bit of land, hopefully I will get a deer. And Sarah and I went for a walk on the property, and I found out we actually happen to have a random apple tree out back, so I figure if the deer are going to come here, that's where they're going to go. So set up my first trail cam, and hopefully we'll get some videos and pictures.
How big's the property?
Just under 14 acres.
Oh, that's perfect. Are you close to anybody else?
Yeah, I have neighbors like across the road, and the property actually backs onto a highway. Or not a highway, but a, I don't know what to call it.
Country dirt road?
It's not a country dirt road, but it's like it's a paved road that people often do 100 on it, even though they shouldn't.
So can you plan on using a gun or a bow for hunting?
I was thinking of shotgun, because that's what I have. I don't have a bow. I would love to get a bow, but I don't think I can get one and learn how to use it efficiently enough to take a shot at a live animal before, well, actually, I was going to say hunting season had actually already started for bow, so I just don't think I'll be ready fast enough, so I think I'm just going to wait, and I'll go out with the shotgun, and if I don't get something in that 2 weeks, then maybe I'll be in the market for a crossbow.
Well, you know what direction the road is, so you'll make your shot safe anyway. So
oh, yeah. No big deal. I've looked at maps, and I figured out, you know, if I sit here, here's my safe shooting lane kind of thing.
Have you seen any birds on the property?
None that I'd want to eat.
Okay. Answers my question.
None that are big enough to eat. How about I phrase it that way?
I'm really surprised we didn't put up any grouse today, because I've usually there's birds on the property that we were at today, but
yeah.
Well, hopefully you have some grouse or something back there. Do you have any brush, or is it all straight open land?
It's a mix of everything.
Okay, good, because you get some habitat in there.
Yeah. I've never hunted grouse, so for all I know, I might have been... Like, I know sometimes... I've heard sometimes grouse will spook and they fly. Sometimes they spook and they just, like, stay still. They do the freeze, right? And hope that you don't see them. So I could have stepped right over top of one for all I know, because I don't know how to properly hunt grouse.
Unless you actually step on them and get so close, their camouflage is just perfect.
Yeah.
You can look at a log for 20 minutes and realize, oh, there's one there.
Yeah.
Their camouflage is so good, and especially if they're in the shade in the woods, they freeze. You just have to look for their outline.
Yeah. But like I said, I've never hunted them, so I don't know what to look for, I guess you could almost say. So, but yeah, so that's what I've been up to for the last 2 weeks.
Guns in the news. Down the Fence lays off large percentage of its workforce by Kendrick's Corner, Recoil Magazine, October 5th, 2017. Amid ongoing reports of deteriorating sales in the black rifle market, firearms manufacturer Daniel Defense laid off an undisclosed number of employees. According to conversations with those affected and social media posts on Friday, September 29th and Monday, October 2nd, the firearms manufacturer eliminated approximately 100 full-time positions. A former employee of Daniel Defense affected by the layoff said, "This was very unexpected. All of us were handed a blanket packet that explained everything. The paperwork didn't even have my name on it. All they said about my job was that my position was being eliminated. There was no severance package. We were just fired." Scope of the layoff is unknown, but first-hand source included current and recent layoff employees speak under the conditions of anonymity said anywhere from a third to half the company's workforce was let go. That's pretty big.
That's not unexpected, though.
Yeah, with the lower number of sales as people aren't buying ARs because they figure, oh, Trump's in, I got time, I can buy whatever I want, there's no panic buy. You know, I'm sure they had overstock. And if they can't get rid of it there, and if they don't get any new, military or police contracts, then they could end up with a lot of stock that they don't need.
Well, you know, the prices up here, I've really come down considerably, because a couple of years ago, you know, ARs were, well, especially when Obama got elected, he was the world's top U.S. salesman for sales, because it was panic buying. And getting stuff up here, well, it was the opposite. A lot of these manufacturers are gearing up for something that didn't happen. They expected Lie Hillary to get elected, and of course, Obama kicked his butt. Trump kicked her butt, so... Which was good to see, and I think the whole industry was expecting for a shock. They expected another socialist victory, and it didn't happen, so the market was just saturated, and the prices have dropped in half. Like, you can get ARs dirt cheap now down in the States, which is good. It's good for us as consumers, but for a manufacturer, it's not a good thing.
Yeah.
In the States, yes, but I feel like the high-end, like, as Daniel Defense is, high-end ARs are still going for the amount they were going for before.
Yeah, it depends on the AR. If you get something that's geared towards competition market, or something like a Les Bear or a Wilson Combat Gun, yeah, the high grade stuff tends to be. I wouldn't. Daniel Defense is good. I wouldn't consider it high grade. I consider it a very good gun.
Upper middle class.
Yeah, I get it better than a Panther Oracle or Smith & Wesson Sport. It's, you know, it's half decent.
Yeah.
But it's too bad. And I think what we might see a little bit more of that happening too, with some of these companies that expected to boom that just burst. So they are nice guns. You know, hopefully the economy picks up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yep. Thomas, you want to take story two?
Okay, this is a long one. I put this one in there just for George because it was so long. I wanted to see him stumble along, but of course he didn't show up tonight. So I get stuck reading it. Some U.S. stats on gun deaths. Now, we can't verify all of these numbers. Mike did go in and look at them, and this is from Ted Nugent's Facebook page. There was one, when we get to it, we'll mention it. We found that one stat a little funky. But he goes, there are 30,000 gun-related deaths per year by firearms, and this number is not disputed. But the U.S. population is 324 million and 59,091 as of Wednesday, June 22nd. Do the math. So that's 0.00000.925 of the population dies from gun-related actions each year. Statistically speaking, this is insignificant. What is never told, however, is a breakdown of these 30,000 deaths to put them in the perspective as compared to other causes of death. So out of all these 30,000 gun deaths each year, 65% of those are suicides, which could not be prevented by gun laws because, you know, if somebody's intending killing themselves, they'll use whatever means necessary. 15% are law enforcement in the line of duty and justified. 17% are through criminal activity, gang and drug-related, or mentally ill persons, i.e. gun violence. And 3% are from negligent discharge or accidental discharge. So technically, gun violence is not 30,000 annually, but it drops down to 5,100. Still too many? Well, first, how are those deaths spanned across the nation? Chicago, for example, the homicides is 480 homicides, which is 9.4%. 344 homicides, 6.7% were from Baltimore. 333 homicides, 6.5% were in Detroit. And 119 homicides, 2.3% were in Washington, D.C. And actually, the Washington is a 54% increase over a year's prior. So basically, 25% of all gun crime happens in just four cities. Of all those four cities, they have the stricter gun laws, so it's not the lack of laws that is the root of the cause. That basically leaves 3,825 for the entire rest of the nation, or about 75 deaths per state. Now, this is an average because some states have much higher rates than others. For example, California had 1,169, which is a super anti-gun state, and Alabama had one. That's the one we're questioning, that Alabama only had one. We don't know if it's one person or 1%. Now, who has the strictest gun laws by far? California, of course, but understand, it is not the guns causing this. It's the crime rated, the crime spawned by the number of criminal persons residing in those states and those cities. So if all cities and states are not created equally, then there must be something other than the tool causing the deaths. Are 4,100 deaths per year horrific? How about it in comparison to other deaths then, if you think they're that bad? All deaths are sad, and especially when it comes to the commission of a crime. But it's the nature of the crime. Robbery, death, rape, assault, is all done by criminals, and thinking that criminals will be okay with laws is just ludicrous. So that's why they are criminals. But if you look at some of the other deaths, 40,000 people die a year from a drug overdose, 36,000 people die from flu, far exceeding the criminal gun deaths, 34,000 people die per traffic accident fatalities, also exceeding gun deaths, even by suicides. Now it gets good. 200,000 plus per year die from preventable medical errors. You are safer in Chicago than you are in a hospital, and it's true. Last week I looked at one of the number one killers is Tylenol. People dying from Tylenol. 710,000 die from heart disease, and it's time to stop the double cheeseburgers. So what's the point? Well, if Obama and the anti-gun movement focus their attention on heart disease, even a 10% decrease in cardiac deaths would have saved twice the number of lives annually of all gun-related deaths, including suicide, law enforcement, etc. A 10% reduction in medical errors would only be 66% of the total gun deaths, or four times the number of criminal homicides. Simple, easy, preventable. 10% reduction. So you have to ask yourself, in the grand scheme of things, why focus on guns? It's simple. Taking away from guns gives the government more control. So the next time someone tries to tell you that gun control is about saving lives, look at these facts and remember that these words from Noah Webster. Before storming a standing army can rule, the people must first be disarmed, as they are in almost every kingdom in Europe. The supreme power of America cannot enforce unjust laws by the sword, because the whole body of the people are armed and constitute a force superior to any band of regular troops that can be, or on any pretense, raised in the United States. A military force in the command of Congress can execute no laws, but such as the people perceive to be just and constitutional, for they will possess the power. So remember, when it comes to gun control, the important word is control, not gun. And as I said, that was from Ted Nugent.
So I tried to do some research into this, and I'm not sure where he was getting his stats from, because I didn't see any...
There's no references.
There's no references to this. So I went on to the CDC, which is the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is what I would consider to be a pretty unbiased. They report what happens, right? They don't tend to put their own bias into things. and I tried to find some of these information. So firearm death, it said, they said 30,000 in the article. It came up with 33,594. Depending on what year you pull, that might be true. Not too far off. The math part of it, there's actually an error in that. They actually misplaced the decimal by two spots. It's 0.0000925, not...
Yeah, I thought that was way too low.
Yeah, there were a couple, you know, someone got a little heavy finger on the zeros there. I went into there, and I could not find anywhere that actually did a breakdown of what percentage were what. So what I mean by that is, it says here 65% were by suicide. I couldn't find any information that said, you know, anything straight up that said, you know, 65% of them were this. So that part I can't confirm or deny about. Outside of that, even when it comes specifically about which state, in the CDC, they do break down state by state how many people died by firearm, but it doesn't break it down by suicide, you know, murder, you know, if it was a cop who shot someone. It doesn't break it down in that way. So you can't really see anything like that. And when it says Alabama had one, Alabama, according to the CDC, had 958 deaths by firearm in the last year. So to tell me that out of those 958, only one was a homicide or like criminal activity, I can't believe that. That is no, ridiculous. Yeah. The casino gives you better odds than that. So
before you start quoting stats, do the research.
Yeah. So yeah.
But I know that the medical malpractice is a much higher number for deaths, and Tylenol is a much higher number for deaths than actually gun.
Yeah. I couldn't find a specific thing about medical malpractice. I did find stats on leading causes of death for medical reasons. So heart disease, 633,842. Cancer, 595,930. Chronic lower respiratory disease, 155,041. Accidents, unintentional injuries, 146,571. Stroke, 140,323. Alzheimer's, 110,561. You know, like, the list goes on about these other, they're not malpractice, but they are definitely diseases or incidents that maybe we could prevent. Maybe we could, you know, put a little bit more money and effort into solving those issues. Because if you could figure out how to, and now I'm swinging for the hills here, if you could cure cancer, then you would prevent way more death. If you could prevent 10% of cancers, you would still save more people in the U.S. than you would if you eliminated all gun violence, or all gun deaths, I should say, which includes suicides. So,
well, we all know for a fact, especially in Canada, and I'm sure in the United States, more people are killed by automobile accidents than firearms.
Oh, I have the automobile number right here. Motor vehicle traffic death, 33,736. So it is within 120 deaths from firearm and motor vehicle accidents, according to the CDC.
Yeah. Depending on the year that you're looking at. So yeah, more people actually are killed by cars and guns. So
yeah.
And cars are more readily available than guns.
Oh yeah.
So start banning cars.
Yeah. I mean, I've never heard someone say, you know, cars should only, like, everyone, we have governors on our car. But governors are set, I believe, by the manufacturer, and they can be set at different things. Some vehicles are set, I think, as low as 140 kilometers an hour, maybe 150, unless you're driving like a tractor trailer. And there's nowhere in Canada that you can do, I think, over 110 legally.
Well, not in Ontario, because they have governors on the truck, so they can't go that fast because people's tires spinning off.
Even in all of Canada, the fastest highway I've ever been on legally is 110. Maybe there's somewhere that could go up to 120, but I mean, you never hear people say, "Oh, all governors should be at 120." Then, right?
True.
So,
yeah, and I've never heard anyone say, you know, if your alcohol limit is, you know, 0.8, whatever, you can still handle firearms.
Yeah, no, the only thing I've ever heard, if you have any alcohol or medical medicinal side effects on you, then you shouldn't be shooting at all.
Exactly. But yeah. If you're operating a vehicle, it's okay as long as you're below the legal limit.
As long as you only have one or two or wait a couple of hours.
Yeah.
So, well, see, nowadays you have one, you're at the limit. So you're better off not to even have any if you're going to be driving. And you're probably better off not to have any if you're having a firearm. So.
Oh, yeah. And that's kind of the way I think of it. It's better to have none. So.
Well, that's actually a rule at our club. Zero. They do not want you out there. Even if you had a glass of wine with your dinner, they don't want you coming if you had consumed any alcohol before attending the range, which I don't disagree with.
Which is something funny that I tell people and they always, their mind gets boggled. My gun club had a liquor license.
Yeah, some do. Some have a lounge.
Yeah, because in our gun club, we actually can rent it out. So if you want to host your family Christmas party, you can host it at the gun club, but you host it in the actual clubhouse, which is nowhere near the actual range, but there's a little bar in there so they can actually serve beer and wine.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Like if you've had a day of trap shooting or you're at a match, there's nothing wrong with putting your gear away and going and having a few beers and enjoying yourself.
Yep.
Just gun, once you've got the beer in your system, just put the gun stay away. That's it.
Yep.
Okay. Mike, what's new in the industry?
So new in the industry. So this is from Wanstalls. M plus M, I'm assuming that's how you say this, Industries is proud to introduce the world's first international defense rifle, the M10X. The M10X, unique and simple design, is inspired from proven Eastern and Western military rifles. The M10X is designed and produced with the latest manufacturing technology to overcome many of these rifles' previous design limitations with unprecedented interchangeability, modularity, accuracy, and ease of component replacement. Man, those are some big words. The ease of use and interchangeability.
Good thing we didn't give it to George to read.
Yeah. The ease of use and interchangeability of the M10X component allowed it to continually evolve, giving M10X operators access to regular upgrades and innovative accessories that allow the M10X to be customized to the operator's specifications. The M10X ambidextrous controls cater to all users from recreational shooting to sport shooting. The M10X's limitless capabilities is a framework that provides the ability to build your future dream rifle today. So some stats on it. It comes in 7.62x39, semi-automatic, rotating bolt, long-stroke gas piston-driven system. The stock length collapsed is 37 inches. When it's fully extended, it's 40.5 inches. It is 3 inches wide. Without a magazine, it is 7.75 inches high. The barrel length is 18.5 inches. It weighs approximately 7 pounds without a magazine. The barrel twist is 1 9.25 rifling. The barrel thread is 5/8 24 by 1 right hand. And the trigger pull is approximately 4.2 pounds.
Do they mention a country of origin?
You know what? I didn't see it. I'm assuming it's somewhere from Eastern European, but I'm not sure. But the retail price for this is $1,449.99 plus tax. And if you want one, you can put a $250 deposit down and that secures you one. And the delivery date is for late December. So to me, this is another AK, SKS
CZ type rifle. Yeah. I kind of like the one that Mr. Uzi was talking about last week. The was it the Raven carbine? That sounded interesting.
Yeah, that's also a pistol caliber. This is a rifle.
Battle rifle.
Yeah.
It doesn't pique my interest.
No. They've been bringing a lot of these 7.62x39 rifles in that are, you know, kind of a play on the AK SKS firearm, and they just don't tickle my fancy.
No, they've never done anything for me. Not that there's anything wrong with them.
No,
the advantage, of course, is the cheap ammunition. But you're using this cheap ammunition, you're giving yourself double the work because then you have to clean it constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But on the other side, there are some half-decent hunting calibers now available that are non-corrosive. And you can get half-decent non-corrosive ammo for it, too.
Yeah, and if this thing grouped well, then yeah, it could make a very good hunting rifle. my thing is a very good hunting rifle at $1,500. I think Savage could make me a very nice bolt gun for quite a bit less.
You can buy an SKS at Canadian Tire out in Cobourg for $220.
Yeah.
I was going to say for $1,400, you can probably get a really nice... what was Savage's response to the Ruger Precision Rifle? I think it's the Stealth.
I don't remember.
I haven't seen the Stealth yet. But Savage puts out some really decent product at a reasonable price, and they're accurate.
Yeah,
it is the Stealth. It's there because the Ruger American came out. It's not Ruger American. Ruger Precision came out, and it was such a low price point for a precision built gun. Savage came out with the Stealth, which doesn't, like, the Ruger Precision looks very AR-ish, and the Savage Stealth looks very
sporting like.
It reminds me of the kind of gun that, like, you see in the movies where the guy on the rooftop opens the briefcase and, like, takes out four different pieces and screws them together.
Is it a modular design or takedown?
I don't think it is. It just looks it's just like it's got bulk in all these odd places, and it looks like it's a very light gun because it's got, like, pieces missing and everything.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, they look like they only put weight where they had to, but it makes it look, like you said, it looks like they just kind of, like, literally took a saw and just cut out the piece, like, oh, we don't need this, cut this off. We don't need that, cut that off.
Yeah.
I haven't seen one, so I'll have to go look at it.
Yeah, it makes it look kind of like an incomplete gun.
More high-priced rifles that we don't need.
Yeah, well...
like, you know, it, for $1,500 for that caliber, there's a lot out there for a lot less money.
Yeah, well, I feel like ever since the whole VZ debacle, a lot of people have been on the search for, you know, the next version of that, the next non-restricted kind of tactical 7.62x39 rifle.
Well, that's it. And the CZ is a very popular format. Like, people really do like it.
Yeah.
It's nice to have a tactical-looking autoloader for hunting.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think people are just trying to find the next one that they can pick up and be confident that it's not going to, you know, disappear.
If I had a disposable income, the Tavor and 308, that to me, that would be a cool-looking tactical hunting rifle.
Hasn't come out yet.
Yeah, doesn't the Caltech make one? The RDF,
I think.
Yeah.
It's really expensive.
And it's a plastic toy.
I don't know. I'm not so quick to dismiss it.
It looks like a plastic toy to me. It just looks.
Yeah.
But I haven't played with them, so I don't have any knowledge of the products. I just haven't played with them yet.
Yeah, it looks like a Caltech.
Yeah.
Yeah, but didn't someone just come out with a Canadian manufactured, basically CZ 858 or whichever one it is?
A Canadian manufacturer?
Yeah, and that's what Wolverine put on their furniture on.
Oh, I do remember seeing something, but I usually just ignore something like that because they don't interest me.
So I think it'd be like. AKs don't really pique my interest. For whatever reason, the CZ just looks cool, and I've shot one, and it's like, this is awesome. I could get used to this.
A Canadian-made one would be a different story.
Someone made it in Canada to avoid all these... because the issue is that they're using remanufactured... or the supposed issues. They're using remanufactured lowers that used to be full auto.
Yeah.
So if it's newly manufactured, you don't have that issue anymore. So my problem with it is that these guns came out and they're the same price as the CZ. Like, I understand you can do that, but come on. What about the guy who doesn't have $1,200 in his bank account to spend on a rifle?
I think, well, nowadays our currency is taking such a beating. Everything's just, it's ridiculous, the price.
It's getting a little better.
It is. Well, the advantage is because as we talked about earlier, the expected boom before the election never happened. So all manufacturers were gearing up and it never happened. So as I said, we were talking about, when I wrote the guy from Durham Outdoors a couple weeks ago, and I think, Adriel mentioned it on Slamfire last week, You can get an M&P for, I think they had it on sale for $450, something like that. So there's a lot of really inexpensive, half decent quality guns in the market right now.
Which is, isn't that less than now like a Norinco?
Yeah.
I think the Norincos are like close to $5.
Depending where you get it. If you get it from Marstars, the Norincos are under $4 still. But a lot of them sell it to the other retailers. Because I think they're $375. But who'd want to buy, you know, if you can get an American-made Smith & Wesson, I'm not sure if the M&P has it, but most of Smith & Wesson's have a lifetime warranty. And it's a lifetime warranty on it.
Well, even if there isn't the warranty.
Marstar has it for $699.
Wow.
For the M&P?
No, for the Norinco CQA.
Oh, okay.
It's $699. Yeah, no one's been selling it for under $600 for a long time.
Yeah.
But, Kodiak Defense CZ858 with regular furniture or whatever is $1,299. And, sorry, that's $1,299. And if you get with the deluxe furniture, which is the Spartan helmet and the Canadian maple and the maple leaf and everything, that's $1,499 at Wolverine.
What's that Type 97? That was supposed to be the newest thing a couple of years ago. What are they selling for? They're over grand, aren't they?
Yeah, but I don't know when they're coming. They've been delayed, like.
I think a bunch of them came into the country, and then people are like, oh, really? This is dumb. I want a flat top because you could only put, like, iron sight, or you could put, like, a goofy sight, like, 5 inches above your eye line. So they started making flat tops for them, but I don't think they've really been flowing into the country. And I think with that extra manufacturing process, it's pretty much bumped their price up to a point where it's not really a budget firearm anymore. It's now up to the price that everything else is.
Yeah, wasn't the charging handle on the top or something?
Are you guys talking about the Type 97 or Type 81?
I'm thinking about the 97, where the charging handle was on top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought you were talking about the 81, which that hasn't come yet.
I don't know. I guess a lot of guys like the tactical look, so if you can get something at a reasonable price that shoots cheap ammo, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but that Kodiak Defense basically CZ858.
Yeah, it's the same gun?
I think it's pretty much just a Canadian-made CZ, but for some reason it's going for the same price as a brand new CZ from Czechoslovakia, so.
Well, that's not a bad thing.
No, but as a consumer, I want it cheaper.
Well, the manufacturing costs are going to be more expensive here.
Right, right. That is true.
And is it a stamp receiver? Is it a milled receiver? You know, there's going to be a lot of variables that are going to affect the price. If they can bring it to market to the same price as an imported model, that's not a bad thing. And if it sells, the price may go down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
And Wolverine supplies, I'm sorry, you guys really need to put a little more information in what your products are. You go to their website and they just have the name and that's it. They don't tell you anything about the product or anything.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. And then there's other stores like, what was it, Wainstall? They're perfect. They put all kinds of stuff in there.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. Main topic. Go for it, Thomas.
Tonight's interview is with Aaron Paulette, founder of Operation Blazing Sword and co-host of the Gun Blog Variety Cast. Actually, our friends at Geeks Gadgets Guns were down at the Gun Rights Policy Conference. I think it was it Texas this year? I'm not sure. It's going to be Chicago next year. Was it Texas?
Yep.
And so Matthew put up a series of videos, and he had two different, but he had one with Aaron. And I can have the interview with Aaron. I put the links for the video in the show notes. Keep an open mind. It's a really good interview, and I think there's some really positive things in here to get new people interested in shooting. Hello, listeners. Tonight, we're going to talk about getting that new shooter to the range. Sometimes we have a difficult time introducing our friends to the shooting sports, and there could be a variety of different factors for it. Sometimes our friends are scared because of the anti-gun media and the political frenzy, and that sometimes is very easy to overcome by simple education. Other times we've had friends who, say, for example, when they were younger, somebody took them to the range, put a big, powerful gun in their hand, it hurt them, it scared the crap out of them, and getting that fear out of the way can sometimes be difficult too. A recent one that I had, I invited a friend of mine, Chandis, to come to the range, and she was really gung-ho about it, And before we left, she says, are there any other people like me going to be at the range? And I just looked at her. I said, oh, yeah, there's lots of women at the club. She's like, no, no, that's not what I meant. And then I realized my friend Chandis, if anybody ever seen Xena the Princess Warrior, that's what Chandis looks like, but she's 6'5" Jamaican lady. It didn't even dawn on me that her skin color might be an issue. And I said, no, 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 don't worry about it. And then it wasn't until recently I was listening to the Gun Rights Policy Conference down in Texas, and they had a speaker that I really enjoyed listening to. The other members of our community and our friends that might have a problem coming to range is the queer community, because there's been so much animosity and violence subjected towards that community. They may have a fear that we might not even think about. So I found out this is a great program called Operation Blazing Swords. And tonight I have the founder and I guess the operationer of Blazing Sword on our show. So welcome, Aaron Paulette, to our show.
Thank you for having me.
So Aaron, can you give me a little bit of history of what Blazing Sword is and how you've proceeded to today?
All right, I'll do that in reverse order.
Okay.
Operation Blazing Sword was born out of the Pulse massacre, because what happened was the massacre occurred on Saturday night. Sunday morning, the nation was in shock. And on Monday, I started seeing a remarkable thing across social media. On Facebook, on blog posts, on Twitter, I saw gun owners who, if you will recall, the media and culture has been telling us they're all straight white males who hate gay people. They were all offering to take queer people to the range, teach them how to shoot, and pay for everything. And I thought this was remarkable, not only because of the generosity, but because it flew in the face of the conventional wisdom as to the right hating the left and vice versa. And I also thought the people to whom this message is targeted, they aren't going to see it because they don't travel in the same circles, because unfortunately, social media, we all end up talking in our little social circles.
Very true.
But because I have my feet in both communities, I'm a gun owner and I'm transgender, I thought, well, hey, I'm in the perfect position to get the word out. And so I just started writing a Facebook post where I took the names and contact information of these people, and I figured I would get maybe a couple dozen names. I'd be done in an afternoon. I'd post it. People in the queer community would share it. That would be it. Life would go on. 12 hours later, I have over 100 volunteers. The Facebook post has become so unwieldy that it has become a Google map. And I've acquired an assistant to help me because I need sleep. And so for about the past month, I was regularly waking up with 100 or more emails in my box saying, I want to volunteer to be an instructor. How do I do that?
Excellent.
Yeah, it was wonderful. It was overwhelming, a bit like taking a drink from a fire hose. And so as of this writing, I have somewhere on the order of 1,400, and it's got to be more than 75 at this point, volunteers. We have them in every single state of the United States. And we also have one up in Edmonton, Canada, which is very cool. I'd like to get more Canadian instructors.
What you do, because I signed up as an instructor already.
Okay. See, that's why I knew we had more than 1475. I picked up about a handful during GRPC. So we aren't quite at 1500 yet, but I'd really like to be. And so the entire point of Operation Blazing Sword is to pair what I call gun curious LGBTQ people. And I really like that term, not only because it's got a slightly sexual connotation, but also because it's true. They're curious about guns, you know, and it makes me giggle, which is really the important thing. So we take these LGBTQ people or queer people. I give you permission to use that word. We take these people who really want to learn, but they're afraid to use traditional means because they have likewise been told for decades that gun owners do not want them around, that they hate them, that they will kill them. And so queer people who want to learn how to use guns, they don't feel comfortable going into a gun store and asking advice. They don't feel comfortable going to a range and asking to be taught to shoot. So we pair them with queer-friendly trainers who will teach them the basics of firearms, safety and ownership, and operation. And I do specifically mean them in that order. The first thing you do is you teach them how to be safe. You teach them Colonel Cooper's rules of safety. You teach them how to be a responsible gun owner. And then once they understand how guns work, then you go and you take them to the range and you demonstrate to them how to use their gun. And in the early days of the program, I got some kickback from people saying, well, why are you asking us to pay for everything? Because ammunition is expensive. And my response was twofold. First of all, I'm not asking you to pay for 100 rounds. Just do enough to knock that fear off of the queer person so that they can decide whether or not guns are right for them. We just want them to make an informed decision. So really, just about a magazine or two is really all that's necessary. Secondly, think of it as a political donation. You want more gun owners in the fold because more gun owners are more gun voters. And regardless of what we agree or disagree with politically about anything else, we should be united in our belief of gun rights and what the Second Amendment means and how it's very important. And so if you pay that now, it will have political dividends later. And so that is what Operation Blazing Sword does, at least for the moment. We take queer people to the range. We teach them the basics. They can make that informed decision as to whether or not guns are right for them. And if they decide guns aren't for them, okay, that's fine. They have made a decision based on their experience rather than what they've been told. But if they decide guns are useful, guns are empowering, guns are fun, oh, well, as a gun owner, I think you'll know there are few things more exciting than taking a new shooter to go buy their first gun. And we will happily expound on all the details about this gun versus that gun, this caliber versus that caliber, whether you should get a revolver versus a semi-auto, that sort of thing. And I'm not sure what it's like in Canada, but here in the United States, most of our states will allow for concealed carry with a license. And so most of our trainers are concealed carriers, and we will help that person go through the process of applying for and getting a concealed carry permit. And so all of this is, to a certain extent, political, but it is political in the extent that it is about rights. Gun rights in America, unfortunately, are highly political.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yes. And so we are trying to bring new gun owners into the fold and defy the stereotype that gun owners are sexist and homophobic, when in reality, they are some of the most welcoming people I have ever met. I have actually gotten more kickback from the LGBTQ community for being a gun owner and being associated with the NRA than I have from the gun community in regards to associating with queer people and trying to teach the left, quote unquote, how to use guns.
It's that artificial political divide that the media and the government has put between us, because we all know a gunny is a gunny is a gunny. If two people share the same passion, regardless what their likes or dislikes are, they once they have that common bond, it's so much easier to grow. And every vote that you take, every pro-gun vote you get, is a vote taken away by the antis. So, you know, getting our queer community involved, I think, is an important step up here. Because especially where I live in Toronto, and we have a very big queer community in Toronto. It's very, very big. And I've had a very difficult time trying to introduce some of my queer friends to shooting sports because of the political and the fear involved. So I think Operation Blazing Sword is an exceptional tool. And I've also been sharing it with some of my queer friends, trying to say, look, it's okay. The community accepts this. Come on out. I'll take you to the range. You know, it's baby steps. It's, you have to get rid of that fear, get rid of that division, and introduce somebody to the same passion that you love. And once you find that common ground, it's limitless what you could do.
Exactly. One of the biggest problems I see in our world today is a concept that I call othering, where we regard someone who opposes us not as a human being, but just as that other. And the moment you start othering someone, you dehumanize them. And it is so much easier to hate the other. It is easier to deny rights to the other. It is easier to contemplate killing the other. And that is not something we want in my country. It's not something we want in your country, because that leads to unrest and violence and possibly even civil war. And I really do not want a civil war for any reason in my country. And so we need to stop that othering. And one of the wonderful things about Blazing Sword is that it reduces that othering, because it introduces the right to the left and it humanizes both of them. In fact, one of the wonderful side effects is that in addition to teaching queer people about guns, gun owners are learning what it's like to be queer in America. As an example, during the early days, one of the volunteers said, "You know, I'm perfectly happy to help train people, but I don't know how I feel about having my name on an internet list indicating that I have a gun." Probably he lived in a less gun-friendly state. And I said, "Okay, so what you're telling me is that you're worried about what sort of social or legal ramifications might happen if you come out as being a gun owner."
And that's very true, because I know some gun owners that don't want the public to know that they're gun owners.
Mm-hmm. And so there was this delightful moment of dawning realization where he goes, "Oh, so that's what it's like to come out as gay in some of these very conservative states. I never realized that." And so it's all about education. You can't teach someone without learning something along the way. And so two-way education between left and right, between gay and straight, between trans and cis, it's all wonderful.
I think what it comes down to is that when you want to take your friend shooting, you want them to feel comfortable and you want yourself to feel comfortable. And we really have to work at getting rid of this political stereotype that tends to divide the communities. Because inside, we're all the same. And we, you know, we share the same loves, the same hopes, the same strengths, the same fears. And introducing somebody who may not have the opportunity to experience sports, you know, shooting sports, it's a great thing. Because you and I know that first initial time that you went to the range, you had that fear. You know, it's just like, you know, it's going to go bang, it's going to hurt. And then afterwards, you have that absolute love for the sport and more empowerment as well. Because up here, we don't have a CCW. So using a firearm is self-defense is actually politically unacceptable to our government. But even though our laws say that we can, they will prosecute you to the full strength of the law if you use a firearm up here. In the States, it's a different story. You have that right, which unfortunately we don't have. And also, there's another organization as well. So if you go through Operation Blazing Swords and you learn the training, Nikki runs an organization called Pink Pistols, and they actually do CCW classes, I believe.
All right. Well, I actually have to correct you on a few things.
Okay.
So Pink Pistols, unfortunately, isn't run by anybody. Pink Pistols is a chapter-based organization. Nikki happens to be a very outspoken proponent of it, and she lives out in California, so she does a lot of the speaking engagements on the West Coast. Gwen Patton is titled the first speaker of Pink Pistols. She does a lot of things on the East Coast. But unfortunately, there is no central organization for Pink Pistols. It's all based on chapters local to the city area.
And I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. Well, it has its good side and it had its bad side. And the reason for this was back when Pink Pistols was founded in late 99, early 2000, it was still socially unacceptable to be gay, to be queer, to be trans. And so The fear was that if there was a central organization with membership lists, that these people could be outed by the government. And so everything was kept very decentralized.
Oh, they could be targeted.
Yes. Yeah. Fortunately, times have changed, and so that's no longer a concern. And now this feature has now become a detriment, I feel, because each chapter is, well, they have to register to be nonprofits individually, and they cannot raise money as a central entity. Each chapter has to raise money. And
that could present some problems.
Yes, it can. And that's one of the reasons Blazing Sword does what it does. We started out as sister organizations because I was a Pink Pistol before I started Blazing Sword. And I honestly thought Blazing Sword would fold itself into Pink Pistols, but then it became this huge thing in and of itself. But Blazing Sword is a 501c3 tax-deductible charity nationwide. So we can fundraise, we can accept money, we can give people the tax receipts for it so they can write it off on their taxes. And then I can use that money to do programs. And so if, for example, I wanted to run a concealed carry class, I could, assuming I had the money, I could do that. If I can get a steady stream of revenue, I would be perfectly happy to donate money to Pink Pistols, who are doing this in their local area, because we are both looking for the same thing. And if they're a registered nonprofit, I can just give them that money. So right now, I see us as being sort of the left and right hand, where Blazing Sword is doing the outreach and the education, but Pink Pistols is doing the community and the maintenance. And it is my sincere hope that every person who receives Blazing Sword training will then either join a Pink Pistol chapter or create one in their area so that they can continue to go shooting with other queer people to reinforce the notion that it is okay for queer people to shoot and just to provide a welcoming community. Because I think you will agree with me that while it's fun to go shooting by yourself, it's more fun to go shooting with a friend. And if you can get a bunch of you to go together, you just have a blast.
Oh, yeah, it's always better shooting with your buddies. Like, I'll go to the range just to target shoot and plink sometimes. But I'll ask my neighbor or a couple of friends and go up and just have a friendly competition. It gives you someone to talk to. You can hang out afterwards and have coffee. You can share ideas, share knowledge. And, you know, the nice thing I like about Blazing Swords is that you plant a seed with a new shooter. And that seed will take root and can bear fruit, excuse the expression, but it'll grow. I just thought about it afterwards. No, that doesn't sound right. If you plant a seed with somebody and that tree grows, then they share that passion with other people. So it's important that, you know, if you have a passion for your shooting sports, share it with somebody else. Maybe somebody that you don't think might enjoy it. Get them out there. I've taken a variety of different lifestyles and friends to the range, and it's amazing how fast that seed once planted grows. Because once they get that excitement and that empowerment, it's like, oh wow, I want to do this again. You know, how do I get my license? Because up here we have to go through licensing and training and background checks, and it's a lot more difficult for any type of handguns. Up here are considered restricted weapons. My handgun permit is strictly to and from the range or to and from the gunsmith, and that's it. I can't conceal carry. Mind you, I have a CCW for the United States, so I can go out of the States and I conceal carry. But my own government doesn't trust me with the guns. So it's important that if you have that passion, be open, be willing to share it with another person, regardless of their lifestyle or what you think of that person. Because, as I said, any vote you take away from an anti is a pro-gun vote and will save your rights further down the line.
Precisely. One of the things that I've heard echoed at the two gun rights policy conferences that I've gone to is that all gun owners are ambassadors, because as part of the community, people think that we are indicative of the entire community. So we need to make an effort to be welcoming, to show that the community is welcoming. We want to present the good side of our culture rather than the scary and overhyped bad side. And the other thing that I've heard is that we are all, to a certain extent, trainers. Now, we may all not be licensed or professional trainers, but we understand the basics of safety. And if you've ever taken someone to a range and shown them how to shoot, you are, to a certain extent, a trainer. And so remember those two things. You are an ambassador and you are a trainer. And so you are completely capable of growing the community one person at a time if you just put your mind to it. And that's how we make changes. It's not one big sweeping piece of legislation or a miraculous change in perspective. It's one person at a time.
Yep. One victory, one person at a time is one victory at a time, and those victories add up.
Yes, they do.
The only other thing I would suggest, if you're going to take somebody who's never experienced firearm shooting before, and like myself, I like my 44 Magnum and I like my 45s, don't put something like that in a new shooter's hand. Start them on a 22 pistol, something that's not too loud, something that's controllable. And then maybe let them watch you shoot the 9mm or the 45 and say, you know, after they've shot for a bit, say, would you like to try it? And if they don't feel comfortable, don't push it on them. If they're comfortable shooting your little 20 gauge or they're comfortable shooting your 38 or your 22, just go with what makes the person feel comfortable. Don't, like you said, taking in with a fire hose, don't give them too much at once because you want to do that introduction and you don't want to introduce fear into it at the same time. You want to make it fun. You want to make it cheap. For example, my range, the membership fee for insurance, it's $10 for a guest fee. So that's cheap. Most people can afford $10. 100 rounds of 22s are going to cost you another 10 bucks. So for $20, somebody could have a whole afternoon with you and you've converted a non-shooter to a shooter.
Exactly. And this goes back to something you said earlier about those idiots, those bullies who think it's funny to take a new shooter and then give them a big, heavy gun, like a 12-gauge, like a Mosin Nagant. Don't show them how to hold it properly. The person, it's almost always a girl, you know, hurts herself, gets knocked over, gets scope eye. And I just want to beat those people because not only is it just a jerk move in general to hurt someone who doesn't know and who is trusting you, but you are actually hurting our rights. And yeah, that is just absolutely the wrong thing to do. I personally think people who do that should be regarded in the same vein as people who hit their spouses or their children. It is really, really reprehensible.
I had, my stepfather was a very nasty man. He was the one that got me into shooting sports. But I can remember he took great pleasure in watching me get hurt when I was 12 years old, and he put a 12-gauge pump, or 12-gauge, yeah, single shot in my arms, 3-inch Magnum, and I went spinning and I got hurt. He took pleasure in seeing me getting hurt. So you don't want to do that. You really don't.
No, you don't, because if people associate shooting with pain, they aren't going to do it. And so if they don't do a thing, they're not likely to support that thing. It really is harming ourselves, and we shouldn't do it. We should be the complete opposite.
Exactly.
And so your technique is almost exactly my technique. When I go to the range, the first thing I do is I have a single action 22 revolver, and it's a Ruger Bearcat for those interested. And so it is very simple. It is very light, and it is the least scary gun I have out of all of them. And I show the people how to use it. I fire it, not only to demonstrate, but also so they can hear it that first time, because everyone flinches that first time. I flinch the first time.
Yeah, everybody does.
And so they're expecting this really loud noise. And just compared to what you hear at a gun range, a 22 is a pop. And they go, oh, that's not that bad. You know, your gun didn't go, you know, 90 degrees up. I could maybe do that. And so a few months ago, I had the privilege of taking a woman to the range. Now, she was taller than most of the people I take. I mean, I'm only 5'5". This lady was 6 foot. So handling the guns wasn't an issue for her, but she was still nervous. And I had to demonstrate each one of the guns before she felt comfortable shooting them. Started on the 22, went to the 380 Colt Mustang, then to my 9mm Glock, then to a Smith & Wesson 38 Special. And then at the end, we got to the 357 Magnum. And her very first shot, she bullseyed. And she was, if she wasn't hooked before then, she was hooked then. And she had a great time. Our schedules haven't lined up yet, but she wants to buy a gun. And I am going to go with her to pick out a gun for her. She knows sort of what she wants just because of going through my gun smorgasbord. She knows she wants a semi-auto. Just revolvers weren't for her. She wants something that'll fit her hand. So I'm thinking probably either a 1911 or maybe a full-size Glock 19. Who knows? And we'll go through all the various, you know, guns that are there at the store, try to get her to shoot as many as she can. Because that's one thing I say to new shooters. You always drive a car before you buy it. Your gun should be the same way. If you can test fire, well, actually, if you can test fire that specific gun, great, go for it. If not, just fire one of the models, because a pistol is intensely personal.
It is. It's a personal fit. It really is.
The way I describe it to most of the women, and they get it instantly, is that long guns are like coats, but handguns are shoes.
You know what? That's a good analogy.
Thank you.
I have the opposite problem with me. I find, because I'm 6'2" and I got really long, skinny piano-type fingers, there's some guns I hate firing just because they're too small. They just don't fit comfortably, and I don't like the way it moves in my hand. It's just not fun to shoot. So it's important to adapt the gun to the shooter. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. And so I say that, and 99% of all the women just get it instantly. We've all had that bad shoe experience. And so they understand the importance of trying it on before you commit to it. Then the next step is, once we get a gun for her, well, naturally she's going to need a holster. And she's already made questioning noises about getting a concealed carry permit. I mean, I don't know if she's going to yet, but she was asking me, well, how difficult is it? How expensive is it? How long would it take me? And these are the questions that show an interest. And I hope that before the year is out, that she will be a gun owner and a concealed carrier, and therefore a gun voter. And that's just one more victory.
Excellent. Now, you also are co-host on, Variety Podcast? Gun Blog Variety Podcast.
The Gun Blog Variety Cast. Yes.
So you also do prepping as well.
Yes, I do. In fact, prepping is how I got into guns. Because, well, I've always been pro-gun in just a vague general sense. My father was a career Army officer. I grew up on Army bases across Europe. My family has always owned guns. So guns were never scary for me. I shot them at summer camp. But they just weren't a priority. I had things which I felt were more useful that I needed to spend my money on. And then I got into emergency preparedness because I live in Florida. And Florida, in addition to hurricanes, also has wildfires and the occasional tornado.
Yeah.
And so I figured, if I live in a place that is constantly beset by these disasters, I should be prepared for them. It's just irresponsible not to be. And so I got invested in preparing for an emergency, not just knowing what to do, but having a plan for what to do beforehand so it doesn't take me by surprise, having gear. Just as an example, there was, back in 1998, a time when practically every county in Florida was on fire. The exception was the Florida Keys, because they're islands. There were wildfires all over the place. And some people were given about 30 minutes to evacuate. And so if you are told you have 30 minutes to escape and you may not have a house to come back to, what do you get? What do you take with you? What do you pack? A lot of people won't know. They may spend a few minutes just frozen in terror. If you're a prepper, not only do you have a list of things, All right, first I get this, then I get this, then I get this. And the wonderful things about lists is that you don't have to think. You just look at that list and you do it. And you've already done your thinking beforehand. But also, if you're a prepper, you will have a lot of your gear already staged. So you won't have to pack a lot of clothes. You will say, all right, well, I already have a suitcase full of clothes ready to go. Bam, done. On to the next thing.
So a bug out bag.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't want to get too technical. There are various terms for it, but a bug out bag, get out of Dodge, I'm not coming home, INCH, all these things. And so the more you have prepped and ready to go, the more efficient use you can make of your time. And so this was something that I was interested in. And just as a natural evolution of reading about prepping, and of course, okay, most preppers don't obsess over the end of civilization, the zombie uprising, the loss of rule of law, but it's one of those fun things to think about, just sort of a what if. And this is because most preppers prepare for what is far more likely. I mean, when you think about it, which is more likely, that you will lose your job or that there will be an electromagnetic pulse attack that destroys the electrical grid? So you prep for what is more likely to happen, losing your job, losing your house, death of a loved one, an extended hospital stay that has massive hospital bills and you're broke. You prep for those things first, and then you prep for the increasingly less likely. But still, by doing research, you've always got the people who talk about, well, when civilization falls, I'm going to grab my rifle and go out and live in a woods. That's one word, INNAWOODS, in a woods. And, you know, you have to laugh at yourself. If you take everything too seriously, you're going to live a life of butthurt. And so, you know, I'm doing research on this, and the common wisdom is, well, you need a 22 rifle in order to harvest game. All right, this makes sense. And, oh, yeah, you should probably carry a pistol to defend yourself. Not just from the stereotypical zombies and marauders when civilization falls, but hey, if you're going to be prepared for things, you should be prepared for violence. You should be prepared to be mugged or someone try to rape you or, you know, God forbid, there's a terrorist attack where you are. And that made a lot of sense to me. And so I started looking at guns as something that needed to be part of my emergency preps. And from there, it was just a simple step, you know, get the bolt action 22, learn how to shoot it. Hey, this is fun. I should get some other guns, getting a pistol, learning how to shoot, getting the concealed carry permit, getting the holster, carrying on a regular basis. And so the one flows into the other. And so I know I've had this long rambling diatribe, but there's a point to it. And so I actually started a blog called Blue Collar Prepping back in 2014. And this was a reaction to the prepper craze, sort of, that was going on. National Geo was talking about doomsday preppers, and I got so sick of these fools because their entire premise seems to be, well, in order to prepare for any disaster, first, you need a small business so that you can sink hundreds of thousands of dollars into your preps, and you can have a bunker, and you can have an arsenal, and you can have all these things. And I thought this was just the dumbest thing, because most people are going to look at this, they're going to say, well, I can't afford this. And they're overwhelmed, and they figure, well, if I can't afford this, I can't do it, so what's the point? And my point has always been, you can always prepare a little bit. If you have camping gear, you have preps. And so I felt what we needed was a blog about how to prep on the cheap. And so I created a blog called Blue Collar Prepping, and I got some other writers, and we've been going at it since January 2014. And for the most part, we haven't missed a day. And so we've got, you know, 3 years of blog posts about it. And about a year into it, my friend Sean Sorrentino decided he wanted to do a podcast. And he came to me and he said, hey, I'm looking for segments for a podcast, because there are all sorts of gun podcasts out there. Case in point.
Yes.
And he wanted to do something that was a little bit different. So instead of doing a podcast about guns, he decided he would do a podcast about subjects that gun owners would find interesting. So he envisioned just a variety show by gunnies for gunnies. And yes, we would talk about guns, we would talk about politics, but we would talk about other things. We would talk about foreign policy. We would talk about technology. And he asked me, well, hey, you've got this prepping blog. You want to talk about prepping? Sure. Sounds great. And so I started doing the prepping podcast, and I did that for about a year, I think. And then the original co-host decided that he needed to spend more time with his family, especially since he had just had a kid and his wife was making those noises of, you need to make time for me or you need to get a divorce lawyer.
Yes, we all have those moments.
And he made the right decision. And so because I had been with the show since the beginning and I had done some co-hosting gigs when the original co-host could make it, I was asked to fill in. And all right, I was happy to do that. And I've been co-hosting ever since. And as a matter of fact, I was co-host when Blazing Sword took off. And so that has been to my benefit, and that has been to the podcast benefit. It's not exactly the Blazing Sword podcast, but the two intersect a fair amount because, hey, it's about guns. It's about teaching queer people to shoot. This is of interest to the gun owning community. So yeah, if you are at all interested in trying out our show, go to gunblogvarietycast.com. That's our webpage. You will see just all of the episodes we've recorded. Episode 164 is going to drop on Sunday. And so you can listen, you can find out more about us, and hopefully you'll subscribe. We are on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podkicker, probably some others I don't know about.
And do you have the contact information for Blazing Swords as well for our listeners?
Yes, you can find us on multiple places. We have a Facebook page, facebook.com/Operation Blazing Sword. Or you can go to our own webpage, blazingsword.org, O-R-G. And I would like to point out once again that we are a tax-deductible charity. I don't know how Canada does with taxes for an American charity, but even if you can't deduct us from your taxes, please donate. You can donate easily at paypal.me/opblazingsword. And I will send you a lovely thank you note with the Blazing Sword letterhead, thanking you for donating and helping prevent the violence on LGBTQ people, because you folks may not know this, but despite the fact that queer people are a very small part of the population, we're only about 3% of the United States population, 20 to 25% of us are all victims of violent crime at one point in our lives. That is a huge percentage for such a small demographic. And so,
it's extremely huge.
Yes. And so the more queer people we train to be responsible gun owners and hopefully concealed carriers, then the sooner we can reduce that rate and hopefully teach all the predators out there that we are not victims. We will fight back.
And if you're in Canada, you can go on the Blazing Sword Facebook page. You can sign up and be an instructor in your community and help teach new shooters to shoot.
Absolutely. I really do want more Canadian instructors because, again, more gun owners is more gun voters. And I've heard you complaining about your onerous Canadian gun laws. You know, the more people we can get shooting, maybe you can get those laws changed.
Let's hope. Let's hope. We just want to get rid of this nut bar that's in office right now. He makes Hillary look good. This guy's so bad.
Oh, God.
Oh. Yeah, that's how bad it is up here right now. But I think we got another 2 years before we can vote him out. So, Aaron, listen, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate your insight and sharing your knowledge with our shooters. And as I said, we'll put the contact information in the show notes so you can contact Operation Blazing Swords. And please, in your community, if you've got some spare time, sign up, teach a new person how to shoot. You know, whatever ideas you have in your head, get rid of them, because knowledge is power, and power changes votes and gets more gun votes for us. Aaron, thank you very much. I do appreciate it.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here. Bring me back anytime.
Oh, you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you very much, Aaron. I really enjoyed doing the interview with Aaron. She was a lot of fun to talk to. Had a lot of good information there. Now, right now, there is only 2 people as instructors for Operation Blazing Swords in Canada. Our friend Ben from Sierra 64 Riflecast is an instructor out in the Edmonton area. And I've signed up as an instructor for the GTA area. Ben said he hasn't anybody contact him yet about it. So if you're in the GTA, Toronto does have a very big gay population. So in the GTA, I'm sure instructors would be more than welcome. As I said, keep an open mind. A new shooter is a new shooter is a new shooter. Every person that we introduce to our shooting sports takes a vote away from the antis, and that's a good thing. And I would also ask, you know, if you take somebody to the club that may be a little bit different from you, I would not worry about what anybody else at the club thinks. You know, it's a good thing. If somebody doesn't like the fact that you're bringing somebody who's different, then that person has issues. Because, as I said, somebody new to shooting sports is a good thing. And if we get rid of that divide, that artificial divide, and we have some diversity, it's just going to make shooting sports stronger, and it'll really help in the next election. So thanks again, Aaron. Events.
Event number 1, 2nd annual Heck Cancer Charity Shoot. Damn. October 21st at Guelph Rod and Gun Club. Ragnarok Tactical, Land Shooting Supply, Grey Fox Strategic, Titan Tactical, TVSA, Firearms Outlet, Fresh Collected, and I think there's a couple more that aren't on the list. Proceeds for this year's event will be donated directly to Mr. Scott H., who has stage 3 medullary thyroid cancer. Your support is greatly appreciated and will make a dramatic impact in the lives of Scott and his family. Sorry, I'm not as animated as Tim from Tim's Good Teas when reading that.
Yeah, I think you did a fine job.
Thanks, Mike. Event number 2, Thomas, go for it.
The Silverdale Gun Club and Lance Shooting Supply are putting up their annual pumpkin shoot. It's going to be... Oh, I lost it here. Hang on here.
Computer day.
No, it's my glasses. I'm getting old. Pumpkin shoot is October 29th, 2017 from 10 to 4. There's going to be axle ring, archery, farm use. There's going to be a trap match. There's going to be a duck zombie shoot. There'll be firearm raffles, t-shirt, hat sales. No firearms is licensed. We put a link in the show note, and there's also a poster in there. You can use Silverdale's firearms, or if you have a pal and you belong to another gun club, you can bring your own gun. Make sure you bring your current membership, or you'll not be allowed to use your personal restricted firearms at the club. And it's a lot of fun. I went to the one last year, and there's nothing better than seeing somebody blow up a pumpkin with the Smith & Wesson 500X frame. I mean, it's entrails all over the place. They had signaling cannons. And they don't put an actual live charge, but just a powder charge alone with the wadding 4 feet away. It's amazing what it does to pumpkins. It's open to the family. Bring the kids. There was lots of kids there last year. It's a lot of fun. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there as a grandpa rep. So I'll have, if you want to try any grandpa pistols, I will have the Excalibur and I'll have a K20X trim. So if you're down, drop by, say hi. I'll be the funny looking guy with the black shirt on that says grandpa pistols.
That's no firearms license required, correct?
Correct. You do not need a firearms license. You'll have one-on-one instructors. If you go onto their website, there is a list for the cost. It's reasonable. All the money goes to Make-A-Wish charity for the kids. And I think over the last year, they raised $45,000. As I said, if you do have your own restricted firearms, you got to go to the office. You got to report to Joan. She wants to see paperwork and she wants to see your club membership. And then she'll give you a visitor's permit there. So, but if you want to take somebody new shooting, that's a perfect place to introduce them because it's fun and it's... The Boy Scouts are doing the barbecue again this year. So there's food and there's hot beverages. And it's a great family time.
Excellent.
And Benny's coming too, aren't you, Benny?
I believe I have permission from the wife to attend this year, yes. So hopefully I will be going. And hopefully I'll be winning, you know, I believe they're putting up a CZ Shadow.
Yeah, and a Canuck shotgun.
Nah, I already got a shotgun, but I can always use another pistol.
I don't want the Canuck. It'll beat you up more than it does USCON.
Think of it as a challenge.
Yeah.
I'm challenged already. I don't need any more. Next one is a CFI Range Officer Course on October 28th. It's going to be at 2300 Cumberland Road, Cumberland Beach, Ontario, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And I didn't put the link in here. I will put the link in the show notes. I did look for any other courses coming around. I don't see anything offered right now by the CCFR or the CCSA. Silverdale does have courses. If you're looking for some courses, they do offer their own courses through another group. You have to go on the Silverdale site, but they do have courses that they do offer as well, too.
Yeah, actually, I think the CSSA, you have to call them up to get up on the waiting list. And I think they notified me about this course. So I don't know if it's the CFI or the CSA, or maybe the CSA just didn't get their numbers or whatever, because I specifically said I can't do a Saturday and I want to get a range to do the range officer course. And so they called me recently, like, I don't know, a month ago, and they're like, are you still only on Saturday? And I'm like, not on Saturday. And I'm like, yeah, it has to be a Sunday. So,
well, that's what this is. This is on a Saturday, is it not?
Yeah. So, oh, well.
Well, it depends too. You can actually, if you contact the CCSA directly, you can actually, and you've got the numbers to have somebody have a course, you can actually have somebody come out and do the course for you. Because we did it at Port a few years ago, and there was empty spaces. So we actually had some people come over from my other gun club. So if you get the numbers in there, they will come out and do a Sunday course.
Yeah, I just need to find 10 other people who want to do a branch officer course. While I'm at it, I might as well find 10 more people to do a nice Ragnarok course on a Sunday. Hear that, listeners? Any of you guys interested in doing the Ragnarok course? Pistol, rifle, Tavor, AR-15?
On a Sunday.
On a Sunday, let me know.
Are Tavors provided?
No, sorry. It's bring your own.
Bring your own
BYG.
BYOG.
Bring your own guns.
And the last thing I saw, the CCFR has a cool giveaway right now. It's a lower, AR lower, which of course is a restricted firearm in Kyrgyzstan, even though there's nothing to it. It's just a serial number component. But it's pretty cool. It has a CCFR logo on it. And it also have a custom CCFR serial number with the CCFR in the serial number. Entries are $10 a ticket, and you must be a member of the CCFR to win. So that'd be cool.
I already have two lowers, though. It's a problem. I have no uppers.
You sound like George.
But you don't want to get into a situation where you don't have enough lowers, so you better get another one just in case.
Well, do you see the safety on this thing? It's pew, no pube, and then A are the controls for the safety.
I think I would have liked Wish or something.
I'd spend the $10 just to have the safety markings on it.
Yeah.
But we put a link in the show notes. I said for $10, if you remember, it's a great little fundraiser.
Yeah. If I win it, my wife's going to kill me.
Does she know you bought a ticket?
No, but this is why I didn't enter the Rest of the Goosh. Not Rest of the Goosh. What was it? Woodstock? The range in New Brunswick.
Oh, the Ashes Club.
Yeah.
To be honest, I didn't buy a ticket either because the wife says you don't need any more guns.
And you listened?
Well, she does the EMTs, not me. If I've got the cash, I can send it out, but she does EMTs. My wife is the banker, which is a good thing if you saw my spending habits and saw what's in my safe, so she's now the banker. I can't complain. She buys me nice things. Christmas is coming. I'm already looking. I'm thinking Takedown 22, but...
Oh, what style? Like a Ruger?
Yeah, I was looking at the Ruger.
Yeah. Too bad you can't get one with the integral that's integrally suppressed.
Why would you say that, Mike?
Just to make him mad.
Just to torture me, Mike.
Just to make him mad. Think of that old man hearing that's disappearing so fast. You might be able to save it.
We can do that. What's that YouTube one where they do that one use one with a pop bottle? I can just see every shot your pop bottle just disintegrates afterwards. Or you see the guys making suppressors out of
oil
filters.
Oh yeah.
Of course, all this happens in the States.
Unfortunately, creating something like that is a prohibited device, and you will go to jail. So I'm not telling you to make anything like that.
Yeah.
And I honestly, I don't have anything I'm not supposed to have. So.
This is true.
There's no risk in risking what you have by breaking the law. So.
Nope, not worth it. Listener email, we've got none. Do I have to go on a rampage again?
Bay of the Bruiser.
Well, at least Trevor didn't get trashed this week. He's gotten trashed 2 weeks in a row from listeners.
He sent me a message. He's like, "What? What did you say about me?" And yeah, I'm like, "I didn't know you listened." So thanks for listening, Trevor. We really appreciate it.
We didn't say anything.
No, I said something. It was a side comment that I don't think anyone else heard.
I think I did say something. We didn't write in. I didn't say Trevor ran like a girl. Or nobody else. Swing his hips like a girl.
I think it was that he had girlish hips.
Wouldn't it be the legs?
I'm not talking about Trevor's anatomy. I didn't write in. I like Trevor. He's a decent guy.
He is a good guy.
He is. He is a very good guy. I think this is the only this is the only podcast that will say nice things about Trevor. we're just those kind of people.
I've slept in Trevor's. Well, actually, I slept in his backyard. The next day, I slept in my truck. But I've had the pleasure of spending the weekend at Trevor's house and his lovely wife Christina. I've got nothing bad to say about Trevor except he lets his barbecue catch fire sometimes. But that's about it.
If you don't know what we're talking about, go give Slampfire Radio a listen.
You'll enjoy it.
That was funny. I forget, was it Mario's wife or somebody was cooking on his barbecue? And it was a long day after the charity shoot. And Trevor's just sitting there, and we see the smoke coming up, and nobody's doing anything. And Trevor's like, "Oh, really?" He's got to get up and take his beer and pour his beer over the fire and put it out. Because, now, what a waste of a beer. Damn. Because everybody is so exhausted, they just looked at it. Yeah, I guess I better put it out. Yeah. Wasted his beer putting out. It was a grease fire inside.
Ugh.
Facebook likes.
1,172. Wow. We're really climbing up there.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Closing comments, anyone?
I was going to say something, but I won't.
Well, I was going to say, now that I know that there are some Americans listening to us, if you're listening to us on iTunes or Stitcher, give us a review and let us know so we can try and find it.
We've got American listeners. Matt from Geek Sketch and Guns listen to us.
Yeah. I know there are some Americans, but being as the show is called New Shooter Canada, I assume that the majority of our listeners come from Canada. So if you are American, send us, or even better, just send us an email and just say, hey, just tell us that you're listening to us from the U.S.
Well, we got listeners in, George showed us the stats one time. We got listeners in Turkey, Afghanistan, Australia, U.K. We got quite a few in the U.K. that listen to us.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. And I think our second largest audience is the U.S.
Wow. Cool.
Which is great. It's super. Like, and I know what you mean when you said you went down and you met somebody out of the blue that knew who you were. Like, when that happens, it's so humbling.
Oh, it is. It's an awesome feeling. Like, you just can't describe it, how awesome it was.
Yeah, I'm not famous yet.
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 You have to wait till BennyLewis.ca starts to grow. You'll be just as famous as Ragnarok Tactical.
Or you should just start shooting more competitions.
Yes.
You know,
iCord's on Sundays.
It's really far away.
That's okay. We won't tell her.
She'll just wake up one morning. Why is the bed? No, where do you go? Small note on the bed. Gone shooting. Be back tomorrow.
Yeah, that doesn't go over too well in this household either. Shoutouts.
Thomas, you're first.
Of course, shout out to Aaron for taking the time to talk to me. It was a really good interview, and actually we talked for about 20 minutes after the interview. So I'd like to follow up in a while to see, in maybe 6 months, to see if we actually have any more people signing up to be instructors. And Matthew from Geese Gadgets and Guns, I mentioned that I was doing the interview with Aaron. And apparently they had a show in the queue already. He said, okay, you put your show up first and we'll put ours out later. So he's actually delaying his interview with Aaron to let us put up our show, which is kind of nice. Appreciate that. And my good friend Kathy, it was really nice seeing you today. Thank you very much for letting me hunt on your property all these years. And thank you very much for giving BennyLewis.ca a place to shoot. We do appreciate it. She's a sweetheart. She's a lovely, lovely person.
Mike?
My shout-outs are to Rod and Ken, who are the two guys that I rode down with. You know, thanks for not murdering me in my sleep after a 7-hour drive. Always a positive. And my other shout out is to Paul from Maryland, because yeah, you totally made my day. It didn't matter how good or bad I did. The fact that I met an American that knew of the show and who liked the show because of I-Corps. So all this I get about being a revolver shooter, you just justified all of it because clearly, you know, you're out there and it's great and it's wonderful.
Have we ever given you crap about shooting revolvers?
I've always just been impressed that you probably do better than I do with a semi.
I don't know. I hear the comments between the lines.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like those are coming from other Canadian podcasts.
No, the ones from the other Canadian podcasts are just direct and straight to the point. They don't beat around the bush.
Yeah, they don't have to podcast with you every week, though.
Exactly.
No, I'm just kind of surprised that you tuned to Ruger for it, but that's okay. Anyone else?
Okay, I'll do it then. thanks, Kathy and family, for letting me come onto your land today and shoot there and letting Benny Lewis use your property to bring more people into the fold.
And interrupting your Thanksgiving while we did it.
And interrupting your preparation for Thanksgiving dinner. Yes, that too. I want to thank MD for making sure I was fed the last couple days because, well, she knows what she did. And I want to thank Mr. Uzi and Sylvia for coming on the show last week. I wasn't able to make it, but you guys really, thanks for stepping in. And I really appreciate, as does Mike, for holding the show together while we were MIA.
Slacking off.
Yeah, and Sylvia was an excellent interview too.
Yeah, she was.
Now we can just, if we can get Crystal Power lined up, I'd like to have her on too as well.
Maybe they're the same person.
No.
I'm just kidding. It's like, you know, when you...
Clark Kent, Superman? Okay. You never know.
Okay, Thomas, take us out.
Okay, thank you for putting up another train wreck and the squirrel episode of New Shooter Canada. Keep your barrels downrange and smoking.
Time spent on the range and time spent with family.
It's not about the odds, it's about the stakes. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
I really like 22 now.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale until I want them all. I like guns. I like guns. I like guns.